You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on a gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area on this December 11th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. And, man, we got a lot to talk about today, man. I mean, just a new story that has taken the sports world by storm with Sharon Moore at Michigan. We broke the news yesterday going off the air, and it has only evolved from there in the last 22 hours, basically. And so we're going to cover that today. Plus, we've got some wonderful guests on the show. We got more Auburn football things to talk about. We get closer to a weekend of college basketball. And so all of that on today's show. But happy Thursday, Christian. This week has felt off. It's felt weird. And yeah. Every day has seemed like we're a day ahead. I felt like Tuesday was Wednesday. I felt like Wednesday was Thursday. I woke up today thinking it was Friday, and it clearly is not. So happy day to you, sir.
Sure, yeah. Happy Thursday. Happy beautiful Thursday.
It is. Great it's outside. Nice. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Today, it's the traditional Auburn, no clouds in the sky. It is absolutely beautiful. Maybe not as much in Ann Arbor, because there continue to be stories that work their way through social media, and despite all of the social media rumors, we will not dive into that side
absolutely
of things, because
not.
That is not investigative reporting. That is clickbait reporting. And so everybody can go do their research on what other people are saying happened. We will give you the information that we know is currently taking place or took place over the past 24 hours or so. Also, going to talk a little bit about Notre Dame again. Yay. but this time on kind of a different landscape of things, because teams now are threatening to keep Notre Dame off of their future schedule. And for those that don't remember, Auburn plays Notre Dame in 2027 and 2028, but there are now teams threatening to freeze Notre Dame out of their future scheduling as a punishment for what they're doing for the college football playoff. Right now, we also have a special guest. No Brad Law joining us on the phone lines at 2:30, but we do have a special guest joining us at 2:30. And then at 2:45, we'll talk college football playoff. And despite Notre Dame, again, that conversation of teams freezing Notre Dame out of the playoff or out of their future schedule, how the playoff is inevitable to expand to 16 teams after Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, BYU, teams like that were all left out. Some quotes that we've kind of taken place and captured over the past couple of weeks. And then we have a format of what the 16-team playoff format would look like if it was selected on this year in 2025. All of that coming up here in hour number one.
Yep, it's a busy show today. So outside of our guest, if you want to call in and be a part of the show, you can certainly do so at 334-321-1390. Again, that number, 334-321-1390. Or you can always shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And it goes without saying, but I do want to make this statement, right? We don't have to say it very often, but I want to, as we begin today's show, if you want to call in to talk to Sharon Moore news, that is fine. We encourage it. It's the hottest topic in the sports world. But let's keep it clean. All right, let's keep it clean. Let's keep it respectful. As Christian said, we're not speaking on what people on Twitter think happened in this situation. We're speaking strictly on facts. We're speaking on the reporting. And we're speaking on what we know. All right, so it's a touchy situation. It's a dicey situation, and one that if you read into what people on social media think, yeah, it can get kind of dark, right? And I don't know what's true. We don't know what's not true, but what we do know is that Sherrone Moore, who was the head coach for the University of Michigan football team, was fired yesterday at about 3:45. Again, we were heading into our last break. We were going off the air, and the news came across the desk of Sherrone Moore being fired from Michigan with cause, right? So that was the first one, and the statement put out by the University of Michigan said that they did a deep investigation and discovered that he had been participating in inappropriate relationship with a staff member, which they had zero tolerance for, and he was fired without cause, which means they fired him with cause.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Meaning we have legitimate reason to terminate you, and you do not get any of your money, right? This is not James Franklin. This is not Hugh Freeze. This is not Jimbo Fisher. This is none of that, right? Talking about $15, $20, $30, $40 million. No, no. Sherrone Moore got fired and will not see a single penny. We then learned a couple of hours later that Sherrone Moore was then detained by police there locally. And since then has remained in police custody since. And the report came out this morning that they were not expected to come to a decision today on investigating of assault charges, which is what they are currently doing. And now the latest update is that Sherrone Moore is expected to appear in court for arraignment on Friday, is what the Department of Public Safety announced earlier today. This story has gotten out of hand. At least the situation. Obviously, the story is what it is, but this just continues to escalate. And I do want to say this too. Hopefully, everyone involved is okay. Hopefully, everything on that side of it gets worked out. Hopefully, whatever needs to happen happens. The legal system does its job, and this can get handled properly. But I want to remind people that we are a sports talk station. We are a sports talk show. And we say those things truthfully to say and hope that everything works out and that everything does end up okay. We will be focusing on the sports side of this topic here this afternoon.
Yeah, we focus on the 120-yard football field that's 53 and a third yards wide.
Correct.
That is what we talk about, and the impact that that has on Michigan, the impact that that has on the Big Ten, the impact that that has on players that currently wear the maize and blue, or the players that are signed to wear the maize and blue. That is the direction that we more so take this route. And from the Sports Business Journal, you were talking about with cause, so no room for any need for a buyout. Michigan right now is currently aiming to avoid, obviously, any sort of buyout, which would have been just over $13.7 million paid in monthly installments through the end of his contract in January of 2029. He would have also been owed any bonuses for the 2025 season that had not been paid yet.
And it comes to find out, too, that Michigan, right, because they announced it, that they fired him with cause after an internal investigation had, I guess they discovered, or it had shown, right, that he was participating in a relationship with a staffer, inappropriate relationship, I believe is the terminology they used. And folks, this was not a one-day investigation.
No.
This was not a one-week investigation. Turns out they started this in early November, and they investigated him for over a month
while still letting all of the recruits continue to sign, continue to let everything go on, not quite being swept under the rug, because obviously once you get concrete evidence, you don't just sweep it under the rug, but you let normal life be normal life as much as you could and then you figured it out and had to completely drop everything.
And I don't think
everything
at least,
drop everything as in drop the news yesterday.
Right. And I don't think, at least from what we know right now, I don't think there's any mishandling of this situation from from the University of Michigan. Sounds like it took that long to get all the information they needed, right? Because I've already seen some people questioning the timing and the delay, right, if you will, with something you just mentioned. The recruiting class is now secure, which that's a whole separate conversation, right? The recruiting class is now done and the season's over for Michigan. Yes, they have a bowl game, but look, Michigan didn't sit, as far as I know, Michigan didn't sit on this information for 4 weeks and say, yeah, Wednesday, December 10th at 3:45, 4:45 Eastern. That's the right time to do it. No, that's not how this happened.
And the way that Moore went about it once finding out, and again, all of the social media reports, if any of those are true, go to show that, yeah, this wasn't something that planned out. It was very, very sudden.
And when you fire somebody for cause, okay.
If you're wrong.
That's exactly where I'm going. Yeah. That's a serious thing, okay? That's pretty serious to say we have legitimate reason to fire you and not pay you the money that's built into your contract. You better be right. Because like you said, if you're wrong, you will get sued to oblivion, okay? And Sharon Moore and the Moore family and everybody in that camp will sue Michigan for everything they have if Sharon Moore ends up innocent, if Sharon Moore somehow wins several legal battles, right, with the police that he's currently sitting with right now, and then there's another investigation or lawyers get involved and it turns out Michigan did not do their due diligence on an investigation or they made it up or it wasn't true or whatever the case may be, okay? But for a prominent university like Michigan to do a month plus long investigation and say, yeah, this was happening. We know it was happening. Here's our reasonings. Here's our findings. You're fired. It's a big deal. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Michigan is probably not wrong, especially given the fact that, again, he was detained by police and there's a whole lot more stuff going on here, right? But with the, again, with the sports angle of this.
Yeah, the direction then.
Yeah, the sports angle of all of this, which again is what we will focus on today, is, man, this is bad news for Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, this is terrible timing. You just had to fire your coach, who I've been saying this on pretty much every microphone I can get in front of the last 24 hours. The Sharon Moore situation, and I may have said it yesterday at the end of the show, and just kind of a knee-jerk reaction, the Sharon Moore hire for Michigan always seemed off to me. He's a guy that was on the staff when Michigan got caught cheating. He then served multiple game suspensions for said cheating scandal. And yet, this was the guy that they promoted and elevated and said, yeah, that's the face of our program. We're proud of that. Just seemed off to me the entire time.
While the other coach basically fled college football because he knew the penalties coming for him if he stayed. And so instead, he's now the head coach for the Chargers.
It just never seemed right to me.
No.
And so, not that I want to see somebody lose their job or I want to see somebody get detained or I want somebody to be in some clear personal issues. That's not what I'm saying here. I'm just saying a weird era of Michigan football has come to an abrupt end, and my goodness, does that football program need a big disinfectant wipe to go all over it? Because there's just so much bad energy and bad juju and bad news around Michigan right now.
Yeah.
And they need a restart. They need a refresh. I said that with Doug at the Max Roundtable earlier, man. They need someone to come in, I think, and just clean house. Move on. I'm sorry, if you've been there for 15 years or you've been there for two or three or whatever, I don't care if you're the nutritionist, I don't care if you are the associate head coach, I don't care if you're the OC, ball boy, doesn't matter. Like, I think everything just needs to be reset and start from the beginning.
Sharon Moore went 8-5 in his debut season last year, 9-3 this year. So 17-8, knows how to win football games.
Beat and Ohio State.
Has won the big games. But yeah, signed a 5-year contract last year with a base salary of $5.5 million per year. But according to the teams, or the terms of his deal, rather, the university will not have to buy out any remaining years of his contract since he was fired for cause.
It's crazy, man. It's.
Did you say somebody to step in for Michigan? Did you say somebody new?
Yeah. What, do you have somebody in mind? There's several somebodies.
Not necessarily.
In mind, according to social media, betting odds, radio talking heads like ourselves.
Ones that like still win, but like aren't happy at certain places.
That's speculation, though.
Sure.
The speculation.
It is.
No, if you've been on social media at all today, or you've listened to Sports Talk Radio today, or you've been on several betting websites today, you know the common names that are being thrown around right now.
If you've been on several in the state of Alabama, you might have to get something worked out.
Well, I mean, there's plenty that will give you odds in the state that are legal, right? I mean, whether you like that or not, that's how... You could still get on some of the others that aren't legal. You could still see the odds. You just can't place money. Don't ask me how I know. I don't know. I just for research purposes, of course. But, yeah, there are several big names being thrown around for who could replace Sharon Moore at the University of Michigan. And all three of the names that I have in mind are active head coaches. We'll talk about those and how reasonable it could be, and maybe some other names from out there as well, as we're just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking the biggest topic around college football today, the news of Sharon Moore being fired with cause from the University of Michigan. And now the Wolverines, Christian, after all the dust has settled in the coaching carousel, here come the Michigan Wolverines. They have now, unplanned, of course, entered the coaching market. And we got to mention briefly yesterday, and I know Doug hit on this quite a bit, and him and I did a lot. I talked with him for a while today and had a great time doing so. This is not what Michigan wanted, obviously. And the idea that now all the openings in college football, Penn State, Auburn, UCLA, LSU, like, even Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin leaving, all the jobs that were out there and open and available are now not, right? They've all found their guys. They've all found their replacements. And so Michigan is in this weird predicament, and I'm curious on what you think, because I'm in the belief of Michigan can kind of take their time here. Your recruiting class that you just signed, believe it was top 20 in the country, that's not going to happen anymore because all those guys are going to be able to get out of their NLIs. Yes, I said that properly. Their national letter of intent.
Yeah.
They'll get out of that, right? They have to be legally. And whatever your roster looks like, it's not going to look like that very long. And then in terms of the transfer portal that opens up on January 2nd, I mean, what can Michigan do? We don't know. And so my belief is, Michigan, take your time. Go find somebody. You pick up the phone and call, and the Michigan logo pops up on somebody's phone, they're going to answer it.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee that they say yes, but they're going to answer it. So when you look at it from the Michigan perspective, I think the Wolverines can take their time. I think 2026 is not even a focus right now. You're trying to build for the long-term future, and like I said, restart from the ground up in Ann Arbor. But you look at that from the other perspective, and it's like, man, all these programs are settled in. All these coaches are there, whether they're head coaches, assistant coaches, whatever. Like, now's not the most convenient time to be taking a new job.
No, it's not. And you think everybody is concreted in, obviously, with mitigation clauses and things like that. You wouldn't be overly surprised, since you've seen so many head coaches jump ship or switch into different ships, if one job opens up and that domino affects the three other coaches that have signed first-year contracts with new schools. But saying that that is not the case, and saying that Lane Kiffin stays at LSU and doesn't flirt with any other opening or anything like that, yeah, I think you're 100% right when it comes to, you don't cash in the 2026 season, but your priorities lie much beyond that one year. And we obviously hear so much about it now of 3 years. Is that kind of time period that head coaches get to kind of turn things around and at least work their way, steady the ship? For Michigan, I mean, this could be one of those, all right, you have 7 years. So if you're cleaning house, you are getting rid of everything. Build this back up from the ground up. We're going to give you the resources, the NIL, everything that you need to compete. That being said, we want to do it the right way, or we want to go back and reestablish the brand for the brand of how we know it. And it might take a little bit longer, but if you do it the right way and you have the coach that's willing to put in that time and effort while also getting a pretty penny to do so, I feel like, yeah, you take your time to make sure that you get it right.
Now, given the buzz that we've heard since the moment that this news came across the desk of Sherrone Moore being fired as the head football coach at the University of Michigan, is Kalen DeBoer the answer to that equation that you just laid out? Because Kalen DeBoer, who, as we all know, is the head coach at Alabama, who, by the way, is preparing to play Oklahoma on the road in the college football playoff coming up in less than 2 weeks. Is Kalen DeBoer the answer to the Michigan dilemma, to the Michigan problem, to whatever term you want to use to describe the situation in Ann Arbor? Because I shared a nugget with our friend Doug Amos at the Max Roundtable when I visited it with him earlier today, and I'll share it again here because I have since reached out to the source
to double down and make sure,
and he confirmed it, okay? I have a buddy that lives in Seattle who covers Washington, the Washington Huskies, on a daily basis, and covered Kalen DeBoer during his time as the head coach of the Huskies. And he told me last night that it was a poorly kept secret in Seattle that Michigan was the secret dream job of Kalen DeBoer. That if Michigan were to call, that would be the place he would go and drop everything in Seattle. Now, Michigan at the time was not available, and Alabama started calling, and that's clearly a job you can't say no to.
Yeah, one of the few in college football that you will not decline.
But my Seattle friend, my buddy who covers Washington, said that Michigan is the dream job of Kalen DeBoer. It's one of the places he would want to go. And so when you're looking at it from that perspective, it's like, holy smokes, that's a dream come true if you're Michigan. Come to find out, there's a guy who's coaching right now who wants to be at Michigan. And I think secretly there would be a lot of people that would want to go to Michigan because of the brand and the logo and the money and the fan base and everything that they have, right?
Yeah, Jordan.
Yeah, it's a huge part too. But will it happen? I don't know. And I think it's fascinating to look at. I think the college football playoff results have a lot to do with that, because you're looking at a possible back-to-back four-loss season in Tuscaloosa without a win in the playoffs.
Yeah, after losing to Michigan in year one.
And already having fans frustrated and wanting him out and talking about who his replacements could be?
That could be, if John Mateer and BV go in and beat Alabama at home and it doesn't look pretty, that could be a mutual handshake. Just, thanks so much. I'm headed out. You want me out. See ya.
Which is what I told Doug, because, I mean, he kind of laid it out that way, and I was like, oh, my God.
And that's when that domino effect of, what does Lane Kiffin do?
Which is what I've been saying.
And then what happens with LSU? And then what happens with the next domino and the next domino and
because
the next?
Because it's also a poorly kept secret that Lane Kiffin has always wanted to be at Alabama.
Yeah.
That, I mean, everybody and their mother knows that, right? But for Kalen DeBoer, think about it. You're talking about the guy that replaced Nick Saban, a job that everybody, myself included, said for 15 years.
Yeah, nobody wants it.
Nobody wants it.
Or everybody wants it. Nobody wants to be the next guy.
You're doomed.
Yeah.
You are bound to fail in that job as the guy who follows Nick Saban. I always said it was the next guy that could be successful in Tuscaloosa. But think about how perfect of a scenario this could be. Kalen DeBoer went from Washington to one of the biggest jobs in America at Alabama. He's not failing right now. He's about to win 10 games again. But he's not succeeding in their eyes as well. And if they do lose that playoff game to Oklahoma, you said it, Christian, Greg Byrne and Kalen DeBoer could come together and say, hey, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. And he turns around and gets on a plane to Ann Arbor. Would that not be a perfect scenario for Kalen DeBoer? How simple would that be? You leave Tuscaloosa. Nobody has a problem with it. Nobody thinks you're a bad guy. Nobody thinks you're a bad coach. And you go get the job you've always wanted. In a place that has little to no expectations right now because it's such a dumpster fire. Sounds too good to be true, doesn't it?
As if the coaching world couldn't already be a win-win. Now you throw that third party in there of, it's a program that, yeah, just do what you need to do.
Yeah, just fix it. It's fine. You got time. You're good. Then Alabama's looking for a new head coach? Oh, goodness. We'll talk more about that as we go, but a fun guest coming up right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And, man, we're excited to have a guy that normally joins us in studio, and I'm sure he will once we get closer to his prime season, but had to get him on the phone lines for a few minutes to take a step away from football and talk about some Major League Baseball, because if you haven't been keeping up with it, the moves are incredible for some teams, and the Atlanta Braves decided they wanted to start doing something.
Woo!
So who better to bring on than our man, Lindsey Crosby, who is our baseball guru. No baseball power hour, but, well, we got about 15 minutes or so, right, Lindsey?
Baseball 15 minutes. Everybody's saying that 15 minutes is the new hour.
Well, it still has the same impact, in my opinion.
There you go.
That's the attention
ball,
span.
That makes me happy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's so much going on right now in Major League Baseball. Obviously, we're talking so much college football, but we do want to take a step into a Major League Baseball because for people, like I said, that haven't been paying attention, it's insane what's going on right now in the league, right?
Yeah, this offseason seems to be going a little bit quicker than some of the previous ones did. And we've seen a lot of top 50 talents already signed this winter, and we're only in mid-December. And something I didn't have on my bingo card, the team that signed more top 50 players in free agency, not the Los Angeles Dodgers, not the New York Yankees, the Atlanta Braves. They've signed three top 50 players already this winter because they were just, I guess, fed up with not making the postseason last year. They wanted to fix it.
Fed up with not making the true postseason and fed up with hearing that Anthopoulos doesn't choose to make any sort of moves, keeps the cards really close to his chest. The most recent, Robert Suarez, made 70 appearances in the 2025 season, a National League leading 40 saves and 69 and two-thirds inning pitched. What do we need to know about the closer coming from San Diego to Atlanta?
So he's actually, for 2026, league team sources have already kind of told us he's not going to be closing this season. He's going to work as a setup man for Raisel Iglesias.
Sure.
And then the expectation is he'll take over closing duties the final 2 years. But he's actually really similar to Iglesias as far as neither one of them really relies on a breaking ball that much. They throw a four-seamer and a sinker and a changeup, and that's kind of their three pitches that are really their bread and butter. So stylistically, very similar. One of the hardest throwers in the league should be the hardest throwing reliever in Atlanta's bullpen immediately. But between these two guys, Atlanta has two of the top five guys in saves from the last two seasons in the same bullpen. So a little bit of insurance. Iglesias stumbled early in the year last year. They've got a veteran closer behind him that can take his place if he struggles. If one of them gets hurt, you have another closer. If one of them's just down for a day, you have another closer. It's fantastic depth that Atlanta hasn't had in the pen in a couple years.
And adding to that word depth, they now get a star piece in the outfield as well as left-handed hitter Mike Yastrzemski. You feel like a name that you've known around the league for so long, most importantly or most notably with the San Francisco Giants, covering up Triple's alley the best that he can. But the Braves have done something, Lindsay, over the past couple of years that I know we've had a lot of conversations about, of finding that platoon guy or finding that matchup guy. Is that going to be what you think? Is that Mike Yastrzemski's type of way, or do you expect him to be one of those everyday starters? Again, a two-year, $23 million deal for the Atlanta Braves.
It makes the most sense to have him be that role player platoon guy simply because he hits right-handers a lot better than he hits left-handers, to the point where hitting right-handers is a strength. It's definitely a weakness. So the way Atlanta plans to use him, we just finished talking to him about 5 minutes ago, is he's going to play all three outfield positions. He can cover anywhere he can play on the grass, and he's good out there too. But you can take 34-year-old Jerickson Profar. You can take Ronald Acuña Jr., who's had a lot of injuries. You can rotate them through DH to kind of give them a half day and keep them fresh while letting him play 3 or 4 days a week and then giving him the day off when you have a tough lefty on the mound. Should mean that, one, you have the depth if somebody gets hurt because he's a starting caliber defender, but then also on the days he's not in the lineup, you have a high-quality pinch hit option, which is something the Braves haven't really had in a couple seasons either. So
especially not on the left-handed side.
Maybe doesn't raise the floor. Yes. Maybe doesn't raise the floor or raise the ceiling, but definitely raises the floor of this roster.
So, Lindsay, and we're talking with Lindsay Crosby, host of Braves Today and the Locked On Braves postcast, with us here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, talking some of the biggest moves in Major League Baseball. Are these moves for the Braves, is this, in your mind, enough to satisfy the fans at this point? Because like Christian said, that's always the biggest gripe for Atlanta, is that Anthopoulos doesn't do anything, they don't make the moves to win, and then people complain when they don't. So is this enough? Is this satisfying, or do fans want a little bit more?
In my experience, having put out some newsletters and some podcasts over on Braves Today about this, the fans that know ball are happy with these moves because they see how these guys address some of the weaknesses from the previous years, right? Adding Mauricio Dubon as a high-quality depth guy and a better hitter than your previous shortstop. Adding Suarez. I do feel like there's still one more move that a lot of the fans expect, and it's some combination of either bringing a shortstop or find some sort of big bat to plug into the lineup. And I think that's simply because shortstop was such a glaring problem last year. Nick Allen, your incumbent, was a Gold Glove finalist on defense. On offense, not only did he not have a home run, he didn't have a barrel, which is a hard hit ball in the air.
Yeah.
So it was such a glaring weakness. I feel like a lot of fans are happy that they're spending money, but they still want one more big move before you go into spring training, whether it's a starter, a shortstop, a big bat, something like that.
There's a name that I think you've been on here a couple of times that I've brought up, and he's now working his way over onto the fan base, reportedly, of the other gentleman here in the room, sitting here with the controls right now. I have been begging the Atlanta Braves for almost a year now to go and get Bo Bichette.
Talk to me, Lindsay.
The most recent reports that we hear is Mr. Bichette possibly to the Boston Red Sox. Can we confirm or deny, or what are we hearing about the Toronto Blue Jays shortstop with the buzz cut now?
Yeah. So reportedly he has spoken to the Red Sox. There's a couple of reasons why he doesn't really fit with Atlanta. The first one is he rejected a qualifying offer, which means any team that signs him gives up their second highest draft pick. For Atlanta, that's inside the top 30. It would be the highest draft pick ever given up on a qualifying offer player. For Boston, that pick's a little farther back. But Boston also has so many options for the infield because They didn't bring back Alex Bregman has not come back yet. They can plug Bichette at third. They can play Bichette at second, move somebody else. Like, they have so much flexibility. Bichette makes a ton of sense for Boston. And I think there's a better chance that they do that. They've been they've made those large contracts like he's going to get before versus Atlanta, who doesn't like to sacrifice those draft picks and has never given out a contract of the length or total dollars to a free agent that Bichette's going to need. So I like it as a fit to your co-host Boston Red Sox more so than my Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. I knew I liked you, Lindsay.
Really,
I knew it.
Really unfortunate. One thing, though, that the Braves fans can agree on that they are very happy is no more Pete Alonso in New York as he signs with the Orioles, which you feel like makes all of Atlanta breathe a sigh of relief. All you needed was Kyle Schwarber to go out to the AL West or something, and that would have made everybody very, very happy. But, man, this is a team in the Orioles that had World Series expectations last year, and that completely fell through. And the Orioles, again, have switched up their ballpark to make it very left-handed hitter-friendly. What are your thoughts on Alonso joining the Berg Feeder crew in Baltimore?
Really quick, on the note of Schwarber, I wanted him to go back to your co-host Boston Red Sox and play some first base for them because they need a first baseman.
That would have been
He's a power hitter, and he's been in Boston before. Mm. There's the pandering. I'm done with the pandering, I promise. Pete Alonso, getting the veteran bat in Baltimore feels like it's a big deal. I'm concerned about the fact he was already the worst defensive first baseman in baseball, and then you just signed him to a five-year deal. We have a precedent of a big, expensive deal to a Baltimore Orioles first baseman not aging well in Chris Davis. I'm concerned this could end up being the next one of those. But for the first couple seasons, that offense is probably going to score 9 or 10 runs a game. Question's going to be, can their pitching staff, which is very depleted, give up less than 9 or 10 runs a game since they have a winning record? But I love the fit, the short-term fit of Alonso in Baltimore. I just don't love how long the contract was and the fact they still need pitching.
And you're on the topic of a pitching staff, and give me some sort of reason to turn on the TV next year. Please, for everything that's good and holy, please tell me that the Dodgers are not going to get Tarek Skubal in a major deal.
It feels like that's not actually the type of deal that they've done a ton. They do deadline trades for rentals.
Yes.
They've done that. But Tarek Skubal would be a significant portion of their farm system, and the Dodgers already have the oldest roster in baseball. They're at the position where in the next couple of years, they've got to replace a lot of pieces. And they've kind of been hesitant to move out some of these position players. And the deal for Tarek Skubal would be absolutely massive and probably deplete their farm system just to get him. And the one thing that Andrew Friedman has done is he's been very rational when it's come to their prospects and who they're willing to sacrifice, because they understand they've got to replace, you know, Miguel Rojas is 37. Right? Freddie Freeman is like 36. Like, they've got aging guys they have to backfill, and that's what they need the prospects for. So I don't think it's going to happen, but if he's going to go anywhere, it's probably going to end up being Los Angeles, which will be really annoying.
Lindsay, that's not what we were looking for. We were hoping you were going to say the Dodgers are done. They decided they're too good. They don't want to sign any more players. They've won enough titles. They're fine. That's what you were supposed to say.
Everybody else gives you what you want. I give you what you need.
Wow.
That's what we do over at Braves Today.
That is
we give the people what they want.
That's what you get at Braves Today, and the of course the Locked On Braves postcast as well with Lindsey Crosby. And that's why he's our baseball guy, and we bring him on.
Lindsey, before we let you go, a name or two that Braves fans need to look out for possibly in the offseason, as you were talking about fans hoping to get one more.
Freddy Peralta.
Ooh.
Starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's rumored to be out there. $8 million salary. They'll probably require an extension as part of the deal. But watch out for the Braves trying to acquire Freddy Peralta to shore up every deficiency they had from last year.
Lindsey Crosby, plug it all, my friend. We appreciate you taking the time in the middle of a busy season for you. Tell the people where they can find all your great content.
I'm on social media at Crosby Baseball. Braves Today is both a podcast and a newsletter. BravesToday.com and wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. And during the season, the Braves postcast, part of Locked On Sports Atlanta, after every single Braves game live.
Man, we appreciate you. We'll get you on and get you back in the studio when the season gets closer, okay?
Fantastic. It'll be great to talk some Auburn baseball with you guys, too. That'll be ramping up in February. Can't wait for that.
Yes, we appreciate it. Lindsey Crosby, go check him out again. Braves Today and BravesToday.com. And during the season, as he mentioned, part of the Locked On Braves postcast. And then, yes, we will absolutely be talking Auburn baseball with him as well. I know you and I are both very excited. Our buddy Jack is excited about it. Lindsey clearly excited about it. Baseball on the Plains, I think it ended up being probably – the best of the three major sports this year for Auburn.
Honestly,
if the players are able to deliver on the hype that they have already between the returning guys, the young guys, and some of the portal additions you made, especially in the rotation, oh my gosh, I think Butch Thompson has a team this year over on the Plains.
So. Should be, yeah. It'll be really, really good regardless. It'll be really, really fun, and we'll be able to talk about it. Man, Lindsey, he's too smart for his own good sometimes. You feel like he gets rambling and gets talking so fast because he knows so much that 15 minutes, we got to get him back in here for an hour.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we will. And he's a great friend of ours and covers baseball better than anybody that I know. So check him out again. BravesToday.com is the website, the Braves Today podcast for Lindsey Crosby. He also covers Auburn baseball.
And again, that newsletter, he sends it out every single morning. Let's see, what time did I get that here this morning?
And it's legit. It's good stuff, dude.
It's usually 6:30.
I mean, he was literally hopping off of the call with us. He had a hard out at 45. He had to be out of here. That was a radio term, sorry. He had to get out at 45 because he was hopping on a press conference with the Atlanta Braves to talk about the new additions. So
6:06 a.m. So if you want your daily fix on Atlanta Braves news, man,
check it out.
It's the place you need to go.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. We will keep talking more college football. Again, phone lines are open now for quite some time. If you want to be a part of the show, you can. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number, or you can give us or shoot us a text, rather, 334-784-1067. We finished the hour talking college football. We flip to Auburn after that. And reminder that Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will join us in hour two. Surely he has nothing to say about the Sherrone Moore situation, how that spot could be taken by an SEC coach. No, right? All that coming up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Lindsey Crosby for joining us from Brave Today. It's a podcast. It's a newsletter covering all things Atlanta Braves, and he does a great job there. And he also covers the Auburn Tigers on the baseball field. So great stuff there. If you missed that conversation and you're an Atlanta Braves fan, you're going to want to go back and listen to the podcast version of the show today because he had some great things to say about the additions that Atlanta's already made and then dropped a name that Braves fans should keep an eye on to add to the pitching rotation. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, a really, really good pickup that would be probably throw him in the two spot.
I would
probably your game two starter based off the year that Strider had. But if Spencer Strider's your number three, your rotation's pretty good.
How do you feel? He was talking about, right, with the closer addition for the Braves, where saying that they're going to bring him in as a bridge guy in year one and then put him back as a closer year two and three. Do you like that?
I do.
Do you have any concern, because you're more the baseball guy than I am, do you feel that there could be some sort of a drop-off or a lag when he comes back into the closer role if he doesn't do it for a whole year?
No, because I think it's two different mentalities, but you're still going out there. It's more of the fact of you're going out for two, if not three innings if needed, or possibly just your seventh or eighth inning guy, and then you throw it off to Iglesias for the ninth. But if your job is the eighth inning, it's still,
you treat it like a closer.
You treat it like your job. You got to go get three outs. And Iglesias signed a one-year deal with the Braves this year. And so there were talks about letting him go last year, but they decided to bring him back because of the last month or so that he had. And so because of that, I'm sure it's that one-year rental. You have Suarez to move into that role. Unless Iglesias has an incredible year, then you could bring him back for one more year and one more year. But
You kind of covered yourself in case that
doesn't
happen.
Sure, yes. Yeah. But I also, I think Suarez brings a little bit more, has more of a different pitch mix. Again, Lindsey talked about doesn't really rely on off-speed as much, but four-seam, two-seam, cutter, sinker, like works all four heaters and, again, is not very fun to face in either box.
But I've always subscribed to the line of thinking coming down the stretch in a game, right, especially eighth and ninth innings, like, yeah, you want to have a guy that's got some filth, right? He's got some of the off-speed stuff with a breaking ball. But, man, eighth and ninth inning, my closer, I want you throwing heat. I want you coming in and getting swings and misses. I want you getting hard ground balls. I want you pumping it at 100 because it's so late in the game. That just feels right to me. That feels like the best closers we've seen in the game just rear back and let it fly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Kimbrel effect. That
the Chapman, the Kimbrel, those types of guys where it's like, man, we've had to go against this guy, and this guy. Here comes the closer in the ninth inning with the light show.
Yeah, and here comes 101.
Right. I feel like the closer, you still want some of the off-speed stuff, sure, but I don't know. It just seems like here comes the closer, here comes the dude, and here comes 101 miles an hour right down the right down the chute.
Right, which I think Robert gives you a little bit more than Iglesias does with velocity. I think the biggest thing for the Braves, too, is when the closer comes out, keep it stress-free.
Yeah.
I can't tell you
the
last time going from Will Smith to Raisel Iglesias that either one of them took the mound in a two-run lead. One run was going to be scored. It was more of the fact of, all right, you gave up one. Now get out of the second and third with no out jam to give you a stress-free save, right? No sweat whatsoever. Just go get me a 3-up, 3-down inning.
Yeah.
Go end it.
It's not that hard. Just get a 3-up, 3-down inning in the MLB. It's not that hard.
Just throw 98 in on his hands, back him off the plate a little bit, and then get him to swing and miss and sword at a slider in the third. I mean, it's easy.
Simple game. Simple game. It's Major League Baseball. Okay.
That never happened to me at all.
No.
I never did that.
No. That's why I never made it past middle school ball. So, all right. Hour number one's in the books. Stick around. We got a lot of Auburn football things to talk about in hour number two. We start with that next.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us on this Thursday afternoon, where we've already covered a ton on today's show. First hour is in the books. Second hour is here. In the first hour, we talked about the biggest story in sports right now, I think, with Sherrone Moore being fired from Michigan yesterday, about 23 hours ago, fired from Michigan. I guess it may have been a little sooner. Anyway, this time yesterday, Sherrone Moore was fired as the head coach for Michigan football. He was then detained by police. He's still in police custody. I mean, it's it's gotten bad in Ann Arbor, okay? And so talked about that, talked about the aftermath of that and what that could lead to. Also talked about possible candidates to replace Sherrone Moore in Ann Arbor and how there are some ties to the SEC and some ties to the state of Alabama. So talked about that in the first hour. Also, we had our man Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today on the show over the phone lines to talk about all the moves that Atlanta is making right now and the fact that they decided to start doing something for the first time in a while. And sounds like they may have even more up their sleeve. So all of that was in hour number one. So if you missed any of it, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, we're starting it off with a conversation that we had yesterday, but on the flip side of things. Yesterday, we talked about some positions that we think could be the best for Auburn football next year. Now, some ones that we could possibly be worried about or halfway concerned about just based off of the on-field production that you saw last year inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. Also, some Auburn football scheduling news in there, all before we get to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. With Bama in, Vandy out, does he have an early favorite? And then, of course, the head coaching conversations in there as well. All of that coming up here in hour number two. Phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes of the second hour at 334-321-1390. The phone line's also open at 784-1067.
Other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Phone lines are 334-321-1390, and the text box is 334-784-1067. That's okay. You're new here. It's all right. You'll get it down.
Yeah, I ran the board for the first time the other day. And
did you get lost finding your way to the station?
I did.
I don't know. I normally give pretty good directions to get over here. No? Nothing? Okay. What?
No, I just messed up.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you looked at your phone. I didn't know if the Braves missed out on somebody or...
Yeah, that's why. That's exactly what it is.
Yes, for real, the phone lines are open in the first 30 minutes, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text like we mentioned in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And I like the idea that we are basically flipping the question from yesterday about Auburn football, where we talked about positions for Auburn in 2026 that could be promising, that could be good, that could be beneficial for Auburn and new head coach Alex Golish. And we talked about the receiver room. We talked about the possibility of the quarterback room. I also, and Christian as well, talked about the linebacker room and what the defensive line could look like as well. We hinted at some of the concerns, but I think that is a broader question that we're able to start hour number two with. And we want to hear from you and your thoughts. Is there a position for Auburn football as it stands right now? Okay, as it stands with the current roster, the current recruiting class, and whatever Auburn is going to do in the transfer portal, we don't know, right? It doesn't open until January 2nd. What are some positions that you are concerned about with Auburn in the 2026 football season? I can go ahead and probably answer for every single Auburn fan and say the offensive line, which we did briefly mention yesterday about the idea that Auburn just simply hasn't had a good unit all the way around in quite some time, right? You have failed to recruit the highest of high at all five positions on the offensive line. You've picked up some here and there, right? Connor Liu is a perfect example of that, a guy that was injured down the stretch this past season, somebody that you fully expect to be back next year, which would be huge for Auburn if they pull that off. But in terms of going and recruiting good guards, good tackles, backups, right? Guys that are also multifunctional. I don't know if that's the right way I want to say that, but guys that can be moved around, right? I've never loved the idea of recruiting a guy that, yep, I've played right guard since I played Pee Wee football, and I've only played right guard. I've never even taken a snap at left guard, so you better play me on the right-hand side, because if you don't, I don't know what to do. I don't love that idea, right? I don't love the idea of that. I get that there are some guys you just can't pass up if they've only played right guard their whole life and they're the best right guard in the country and you can get them. Sure, go get them. But Auburn hasn't done that. Auburn hasn't found many of the greatest offensive linemen in high school recruiting. And then in terms of hitting the portal, you've gotten big names. They just haven't panned out. And so I think that is the clear concern for most Auburn fans. And Specter just texted us in the text box and said, you're speaking my language, because that's what he always talks about, and he's right. But other positions for you, Christian, that could be of concern next year for Auburn football as it stands right now.
Yeah, sorry. See, I did have a reason that I halfway messed up. I had to step out for a minute. So the phone line's in the text box. I'm not even going to mess it up this time.
Don't even try.
I'm guessing you mentioned offensive line.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That was obviously the blaring either a concern or just the question mark, just again based off of the on-field production of who they choose to keep or if who Golish and them try to go after in the portal, because again he said that he wants to try and dominate the run. He wants to be an explosive run team, and that will open up the passing game. And so the first one, obviously the offensive line. Second one, I wonder how much he, and to be honest, I guess I haven't looked at any big numbers with Golish's offense individually or based off of positions, but I mean, Auburn needs the tight end room to recover.
Yeah.
Auburn needs the tight end room to come back and be one of those positions that you can trust on third down and five, third down and seven, to go and run an 8-yard hitch route and make a contested catch over the middle of the field and move the chains, get a first down, or be that big body in the end zone that you feel like you can go to. That's a position that you feel like you need that, and then blocking as well. And you've had a couple of decent ones at some of those different characteristics, but bringing that position back as a whole is something that you feel like Auburn needs to have, just simply from the standpoint of consistency, right? I mean, you had Brandon Frazier last year when he was healthy, you ended up being really good and kind of that surprising guy that could go out and catch balls out of the backfield or from that tight end spot. But there's obviously been a couple that haven't done that.
Yeah.
And there's
well,
ones
I've given
that,
credit to Brian Harsin when he was here, very little credit, but he actually used the tight ends when he was the head coach here. And I thought Hugh Freeze was going to do that, and that just didn't happen. And you know, tight end is that position in football. It's a lost art, I feel like. It's one of those where you don't...
It's comparable to special teams.
Yeah.
You don't realize that it's an issue until you don't have it as a luxury.
And it's not even... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess there's a debate, right? With a tight end in particular, would you rather have a great catching tight end or a great blocking tight end? You can have both. You can be both. But I think you notice a tight end that doesn't block well more than you notice a tight end that doesn't catch the football or get open, right? The tight end that has 8 catches on the year, I don't guess I particularly care about, but the tight end that goes out and constantly misses and whiffs on his blocks and running back gets blown up because of it or quarterback gets drilled on the read option, yeah, that's a little frustrating. But what you're talking about is dropping back and dumping it off to the tight end, or finding your tight end inside the 10-yard line, or when you need to bail out on 3rd and 8, and there he is on a sit-down route right at the first down marker, get it to him.
Yes.
And Auburn simply has not had that.
Looking at South Florida right now, they had 4 tight ends catch footballs this past year.
There you go.
Their leading tight end, Wyatt Sullivan, had 17 grabs for 177 yards and 2 touchdowns. That in itself would be refreshing to have on the plains.
17 catches in what? In all 12 games, so about 1.5 per game.
I mean, a catch and a half a game, but averaging 10.5 yards a grab.
I compare it to a big man in basketball shooting a 3. You don't have to do it all the time. Just do it enough to where they have to respect it.
Yeah, and then Jonathan Echols, again, their backup tight end. 9 grabs, 109 yards, and 3 touchdowns. You want to talk about using them in the red zone? That's 5 touchdowns. 5 of the 28 grabs by tight ends, by the starting 2. And then you had 2 other tight ends catch 1 ball each. So say those 2 tight ends caught 26 passes. I mean, that's two a game. Two a game for 22 yards.
And what'd you say, eight touchdowns?
Five touchdowns.
Five touchdowns, sorry.
25 almost percent of your catches found the end zone.
That's effective.
That's very effective.
That's very, in comparison, right? In comparison, for Auburn, whose leading tight end was Brandon Frazier, followed by Preston Howard right after him, okay, you had those two guys who had 23 total catches on the season, 13 for Frazier, 10 for Preston Howard, zero touchdowns. Zero. You had none, okay? Ryan Gee, he did not have a touchdown. He had a fumble this year. I do remember that.
That's on the first catch that he had.
He had zero touchdowns, and then Camden Etheridge had one catch for 14 yards. So no tight end caught a touchdown this year for Auburn. Not one. And of the four tight ends that caught a pass, 13, 10, 2, and 1. 13, 10, 2, and 1. So 26, is my math right on that? 26 catches for zero touchdowns this year for Auburn tight ends.
And how many total yards?
Less than 200. None of them had more than 100.
That's what I was about to say. I guarantee you, because every one of them were four-yard dump-offs.
Yeah, I mean, look at it. Frazier averaged 7.5 yards per catch.
And that was because he had one that went for like 28.
His longest was 19, yeah.
Oh, okay.
His longest was 19. Howard's was 19. Gee, his longest was 13. I mean, I'll do the math really quick. You had 97 yards, okay? 97 for Frazier plus 84 for Howard. You had 20 there, and you had 14 there. That math is not right. I wish I could do mental math, but I definitely cannot. I keep hitting the wrong button. That's why. And then what did I say for him? 14. 215 yards total. 215 yards divided by 26 catches. You averaged 8 yards a catch for your tight ends this year for Auburn.
The two receivers or the two tight ends for South Florida had 294 yards and five touchdowns.
So,
again, not saying that that needs to be the position that you go and you knock down, but it's one of those groups. Again, I compare it to a really good field goal kicking unit where they're not always needed. But as soon as you go out there and the job is not done two or three times, you now notice it in every single game. And it makes coaches change their decision-making just enough because, well, we don't really trust that guy on third down and six, or we don't trust that guy from 45 yards. And so it changes everything about the way you go about it. And then you add, man, a guy that's a good blocker and a decent enough receiver to go out there and make an impact and create holes for Jeremiah Cobb, create holes for whoever else is needed, but then can sink out of the backfield. You can line them up, not quite in that slot, but almost that Rivaldo Fairweather, Travis Kelce type spot. By no means am I comparing the two, but Rivaldo Fairweather actually lined up not in a three-point stance every once in a while outside the right tackle.
Right.
Kind of where Travis Kelce does every once in a while. That can be a position that is so uniquely boosted by the way that this team runs their offense, because if you run that RPO system, but you can get that tight end on the outside linebacker on a cutback block or get him right over the middle of the field on a drag route or a 4 or 5 yard sit-down route, all of a sudden – first and 10 becomes second and 4 with a completion. I feel like you haven't seen that in forever.
And I want to put something to bed, too, before we get to break. I can hear it now that there would be Auburn fans that say, well, Auburn just has Auburn has too many good receivers for a tight end to break through, or I want Auburn to throw it to receivers, not to tight ends. Let me drop a little knowledge on you here really quick.
Uh-oh.
Do you know who the third leading receiver is on the Ohio State Buckeyes this season?
Max
Clair. Behind Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate, two of the best receivers
looking,
in the country.
My guess is Max Clair.
It is Max Clair indeed. He has 43 catches for 448 yards. Does the tight end for Ohio State. He does have two touchdowns as well.
And you know why? Because they bracket the two receivers, which leaves the middle of the field wide freaking open.
Which is where Max Clair lives. His average on the season, 43 catches for 448 yards. Simple math tells you that's over 10 yards per grab. He averages a first down every time they throw it to him. With the two of the best receivers in the country on the field.
I don't even think it's of the...
I don't know. I think there's a couple that are right
there. If you're going by a duo.
Duo, yeah. Yeah. The best duo in college football at the receiving core, and yet Ohio State still finds a way to throw it to a tight end. So I don't want to hear the argument of, well, Auburn just has good receivers, or I want him to throw it to wide receivers. The tight end can be good too. And again, the core of this conversation as we get to break, because there's more I want to get to here, is what positions are we concerned about for Auburn football next year? With the tight ends, I'm concerned until I see it. And I'm in total agreement with you. You mentioned special teams. And boy, do we have words on that. But there could be good news because a hire has been made. We'll talk about that when we come back. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. We come back to the Thursday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking all things Auburn football right now and talking about positions that we are excited about for 2026, some positions we are a little concerned about for 2026, and, man, some of them that are really just up in the air. And more comments on that in just a moment, but we get to the phone lines at 334-321-1390. Shane, what's going on, man? What's on your mind?
Hey, guys, how y'all doing today?
Doing good. Well. It's good to hear from you.
Hey, just two things real quick. Earlier conversations you had about if the board leaves to Michigan, what would Kiffin do? Do you really see him leaving? He's right now, yeah, maybe he might have chosen Alabama over that, but he's got a cush spot where he's at right now. Not really any competition recruiting wise. He's got as much NIL as he could possibly want,
mm-hmm.
And he's one of the top, highest paid coaches in the country. I know he gets that rep from jumping. I don't see it happening. Even if Bama came available right now, they would have to throw the stink at him, for him to leave.
Do I? Do I realistically think that Lane Kiffin would leave for that job? No, not at this time. Yeah.
It's a very similar situation from DeBoer Washington to DeBoer Alabama, right? Of this job wasn't available when I took the other job, and now, for all you know, if this does happen, Lane's sitting there in Baton Rouge saying, "Ah, dang it." But I think he's quite fine in Baton Rouge, given $25 million annually.
But I'm not counting off anything when it comes to Lane Kiffin, because that guy's crazy.
I would not be surprised. I'll say that.
Yeah, exactly.
If he did that.
Exactly.
But anyway, what I'm most worried about is still the quarterback situation. Mm. And it will be that until I see a quarterback that can competently throw the ball where it needs to go on a regular basis.
Yeah. See it to believe it, Mo. Yep.
I know. I hate that we ran him out. I really do. But anyway, pass the pass. I want to know what we're going to do with Deuce. Is he sticking around? Is he okay being a backup to Ashton Daniels?
Mm-hmm.
Is Ashton going to be the starter, or is it wide open? Are we getting somebody, a third option coming in sometime soon? And maybe, I don't know. I feel like we're going to waste Deuce. If he doesn't play this year, I mean, would you stick around? He's not Peyton. I mean, he's not the Manning boy,
Arch,
he's not like that. He's not like – I have a feeling, and it's probably an accurate run, if he's not the starter, is he going to sit on a bench for an entire year, another year? I don't know. I guess maybe it depends on how much he's paying him to sit on the bench. But
takes away a little bit of the stress of life.
Yeah, right? So that, I guess. And did do think while we're on that the money kind of takes away from these guys that are they could be superstars and they got that hunger in them because they're trying to get to the NFL to get the money. But now that they got the money, and some of them aren't even playing, mm-hmm. do they lose some of that edge that got them to that point?
They absolutely do, Shane. Not everybody, right? There are still ballers and dogs out there that want nothing but to be great at what they do. But the money situation in terms of NIL and just paying college athletes, it 1,000% has killed a lot of the motivation and the hunger in these athletes. It's evident. You can see it.
Yeah. So I would say, it's sad. So I don't know. I'm real curious to see what they do with quarterbacks, specifically. And then I guess the obvious would be the O-line, you know.
Yeah.
I don't remember when we had that again, 04, something like that. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got, guys.
All right. Appreciate it, Shane. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390 chiming in on the conversation of positions for Auburn football in 2026 under new head coach Alex Golish that fans are confident in, not confident in, and just don't really have a whole lot of an idea. And the quarterback is obviously one that Shane is in see it to believe it mode, and I think most Auburn fans are, right?
Yeah. It's
in the Byron Brown stuff, I know, has people so confused.
That is, yeah, for those that have not seen that, Byron Brown, the star quarterback for South Florida, won't play in the bowl game, but will serve as the assistant coach in the bowl game, basically helping out the offense and directing plays.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a very interesting situation, to say the least. When it comes to Deuce Knight and Byron Brown and Ashton Daniels and whoever the case is, Deuce is going to do what he does. You feel as of now the answer for Auburn will either be Byron Brown or one of the other two, either Ashton or Deuce. But Auburn cannot be dominated by a name that has stars next to their name so much to where you don't go out and get talent right now. To where if the answer is Byron Brown and that risks Deuce leaving, it's what you have to do.
I think
you can't shy away from what somebody has the potential to do versus going and getting somebody with their previous coach that put a hell of a season together.
The man-to-man conversation needs to happen between Alex Golish and Deuce Knight on whether both of them want to be together, if they don't want to be together, and what the future holds. You just got to lay it out there.
And again, all of that is still determining with the transfer portal because Brian Hartline's now the head coach at South Florida.
Yeah, you're right about that. More SEC news right after this with Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And with all the drama and news and things going on around college football, whether they directly impact the SEC or not, this guy covers it. He talks about it, and we enjoy doing so with him. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC with us now on the phone lines, our longtime Thursday 3:30 guest. What's going on, my man? Everything good for you?
I mean, it's just craziness in the world of college football. It's like the season ends and the coaching carousel spins out of control. Now it's the assistant coaching carousel spinning, and then on top of it, transfer portal, guys declaring for the draft. I mean, college football is a 365 sport. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
I mean, there's just so much to cover, and last time we talked to you, we were able to get your initial thoughts on a lot of the coaching hires, including Alex Golish and Will Stein and things like that, and we may revisit that if we have time, but I know it doesn't directly impact the SEC, at least for right now, but, man, your takes on the Sharon Moore situation, obviously sad off the field and the fact that he's still detained with police and appearance in court tomorrow, but, I mean, where does this rank in terms of the wildest stories you've heard in college football?
Yeah, I mean, look, a college head coach, you know, sleeping around. I mean, those stories go, they're as old as time, right? I mean, those are old, you know, those are always going to exist. You know, Alabama famously had a Mike DeBose situation. So, I mean, everybody's kind of got stories like this. But in the year 2025, you would think most coaches would be smarter with this kind of stuff. And, hey, it's kind of hard to hide and all that kind of thing. But to me, you know, how this thing spiraled so quickly, apparently Michigan people, like, talking to them, this was well known for months and months. That this kind of just this didn't just pop out of the blue. Now, for a lot of us, it did, but you're talking about a coaching cycle that had so many of these big jobs open, from LSU to Florida to Penn State, and they've all been filled. And now you're going to add a Michigan to the mix. It's just absolutely wild. And yeah, so Kalen DeBoer's name has kind of been a name that's floated out there, and you know, it's apparently, you know, he spent some time in Michigan, obviously, and you know, the thought is, would he want to return there? 2 years in the SEC, is this too hard? I was told, I think his buyout is around $4 million if Michigan wanted to pay that to Alabama. And, you know, I'd be part of Alabama putting their hands up and going, you know what, man, if you want to leave, go ahead and leave. Nobody's going to stop you. So I don't think that's going to happen. But, again, it's a story that's kind of come out. And, you know, it was one thing to have DeBoer's name being thrown around for the Michigan job a few weeks ago, but I mean, for the Penn State job. But now, you know, Michigan is a different animal. You know, they're only 2 years removed from winning a national championship with that program. So we'll see. But man, it is a big card to open up here at this point in the offseason.
Well, there's some people that think it won't happen for DeBoer to Michigan. Other people that think that it absolutely could, and that it's a job that he has been looking at from a distance for quite some time. And let's play our favorite game, Chris, the what-if game. And what if this does happen, that Kalen DeBoer were to leave Alabama and go to Michigan? Man, we kind of laid out a situation earlier here on the show. Think about how easy of a transition and how much sense it would make for Kalen DeBoer, who was at Washington, then took over at Alabama following Nick Saban, a job that everybody has claimed they were destined to fail no matter who it was. And then you could just ride off into the sunset after 2 years at Bama and take a job at Michigan that has little to no pressure because of all the off-field stuff that they've got going on. I mean, would that not just make perfect sense for Kalen DeBoer?
I mean, it might be. My question is, how much does he still believe in what they're building in Alabama? I mean, you know, he just had a top 10 recruiting class. You know, he just got his right-hand man, Ryan Grubb, in there this year to help run the offense. There's plenty of reasons for Kalen DeBoer to just stay put and keep building this thing at Alabama. And yeah, he's not having Nick Saban-level success, but he did make the playoff in year two, and oh, by the way, their season's not over with yet. I mean, they're still going to go play a playoff game, and you know, I had some people telling me they think Bama will beat Oklahoma and then have a really good chance to beat Indiana in round two. So, you know, this thing could go on for a while, and if DeBoer's playing for another couple of weeks, Michigan's going to have to go elsewhere because they're not going to be able to sit around and wait for him. So that's one of the big dominoes to watch here and see how it falls. But to me, you know, for the Alabama fans who are wanting to push DeBoer, going, yeah, go. I ask all of them, who do you want? Who do you think you're going to get? I mean, who's better right now? And we can put, you know, basically douse any discussion of Lane Kiffin, LSU smart, all the stuff that they gave in to Kiffin on his concessions on, okay, we'll give you a bonus if Ole Miss wins the championship. All the stuff that they put in there, guess what? They were smart enough to put an escalator and say, you know, you can't leave for another job, you know, before you even coach a game at LSU. So that's written into his deal. Lane Kiffin's not leaving LSU. He's the LSU head coach. And so Alabama, where do you go? Well, I've had a few people say, you know, if DeBoer were to leave, you know, they don't want Dabo. They don't want this guy. They don't want that guy. I had somebody tell me earlier today, they might just go get Glenn Schumann, you know, who's been Kirby's right-hand man as his DC.
Interesting.
And, you know, kind of is get, you know, take a gamble. Is this the next Kirby? You know, I mean, the guy who can recruit, who's defensive-minded, you know, that could be the move. And when you look at this coaching cycle and everybody going younger, you know, I think the old retreads are a thing of the past. You know, the old 50-year-olds or 50-plus, 60-year-olds like the Brian Kellys and the Hugh Freezes and stuff like that. I think it might behoove Bama to just go younger. But, again, we'll see how it plays out. I just think right now the betting money is DeBoer will be back at Alabama next year.
Well, Chris, you mentioned Alabama's season far from over. They are in the college football playoff. We haven't talked to you since the official playoff bracket came out. You have four SEC teams that are going to be playing in the first round. You also have Georgia in the quarterfinals in there as well. Your thoughts on the overall seeding, as there has been absolutely no drama whatsoever on teams that are in versus the teams that are out.
Yeah, I woke up Sunday morning thinking Bama was out. I just thought them losing, and I said it last week, I think, on your show. I think I said barring absolutely, you know, a lopsided loss in the SEC championship, I was like, I think Bama's in. Well, they had a lopsided loss in the SEC championship, yeah. And so I thought it was a perfect opportunity for the committee to drop them down. And for people who were like, well, they were one of the two best teams that are playing the conference championship. Yeah, by tiebreakers. Like, let's be real. A&M still was – A&M had less losses than Alabama. Like, let's mm-hmm. be real. Like, it came down to a tiebreaker and – you know, conference win percentage and all that on even why Alabama was in Atlanta. You know, it should have been A&M versus Georgia. It even could have been A&M versus Ole Miss. So anyway, I mean, that's why Bama was in. But again, I get it. They lost the conference championship, but still, you're a three-loss team. And you know, this is the first time the committee has put in an at-large team with three losses. And I do think that Bama brand carries a lot of cachet still. I think those people in that room, I think there's two brands that get the benefit of the doubt no matter what, and that's Alabama and that's Ohio State. I just think no matter what they're ranked, no matter where they are, those are the two teams that are always going to get the benefit of the doubt from folks. And so, you know, again, is Bama going to get embarrassed by Oklahoma and be one and done? They could be. And if they are, man, there's going to be a lot of people in Notre Dame who are already pissed will be even more pissed.
Chris, your thoughts overall on rematches in the college football playoff? Obviously, once you work your way later on into the playoff quarterfinals and the semifinals, they are a little bit easier to be had again with the two best teams in SO Conference. But Alabama, Oklahoma, a rematch. Ole Miss and Tulane, a rematch. And then possibly your thoughts on Miami going into College Station to try and upset the Aggies in round one.
Yeah, I'm fine with the Oklahoma-Alabama rematch because it's a change of venue, right? I mean, they played in Tuscaloosa a few sure. weeks ago. That'll be in Norman. And gosh, those people in Norman are going to be nuts. So, I mean, I had some friends who were there for the LSU-Oklahoma game, and Oklahoma gave them nothing to root for. And he said those people were still losing their minds, going absolutely nuts and bonkers. So I can't imagine what they're going to be like for a home playoff game with, by the way, they're shutting down campus next Friday. Oklahoma already announced they've canceled classes. They've told all non-essential employees not to come to work. I mean, it is going to be insanity in Norman next
More
Friday.
Importantly, who has classes on December 19th?
Yeah, I mean, it's those weird intercession people. I was never one, but they're weirdos. But that said, I think that's fine. The Tulane-Ole Miss game is interesting just from a couple of different angles. What does Ole Miss look like without Lane Kiffin? I know they're trying to do their best. We're fine. We're even stronger without Lane Kiffin. He sucks. I mean, every Ole Miss fan has convinced themselves they're in a better spot now than they ever were with Lane Kiffin. It's like, okay. Harsh reality, reality check going to come back real soon. But I do think Ole Miss is at home. They should have some continuity there and be able to win that. But I will say it's a different Tulane team than they played back in whatever that was, week three or four. I mean, Tulane's a much better team on the backstretch of the season. John Summerall is, you know, he's already got the Florida job, but he's everybody I've talked to there in New Orleans has said he's still very much focused on this team and wants to go as far as they can. So I think you'll get a better effort from Tulane. I don't think they'll pull off the upset. I mean, they're still, 17-point underdogs, but I think you'll get a better effort from them. And then the Miami A&M game, I was in A&M last weekend for a wedding in College Station, and just being around that campus, those people are going nuts, though. Like, they can't get over the loss to Texas. Like, they want to get that bad taste out of their mouths, And yeah, I was a little disappointed for them. I thought it was going to be an 11 a.m. kick. But let me tell you, 11 a.m. or 11 p.m., the Kyle Field is going to be rocking. And I was talking with somebody yesterday who covers A&M. They said, look, I know A&M's only got like 3 interceptions on the year defensively, but I said, take the over on whatever the interceptions are for Carson Beck, because Carson Beck in a big spot, God, he just turns the ball over. And so I would expect the Aggies to roll Miami next Saturday morning.
Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC with us here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Good news is we will, checking the calendar really quick, yes, we will talk to you one more time before those playoff games, of course, the week before Christmas, so we'll get you back on this time next week. But your thoughts on SEC basketball as we continue to inch closer and closer to the start of conference play? I mean, SEC just doesn't look as good as it did last year at this point, huh, Chris?
Yeah, I kind of figured that. You know, they were so strong last year out of the gates. They went in the, you know, the interconference challenges and all that. I mean, it was, you know, you kind of knew that it regression to the mean. It wasn't going to be as dominant. I still think there's a lot of teams that are young. I mean, I think Auburn's still kind of growing into who they're going to be. But Auburn looks like a much better team now than they did, you know, in game number one. You know, Alabama's kind of going through their growing pains. I have a depressed wife at home with Kentucky. You know, if Kentucky's playing a ranked team, it's like they just forget how to play basketball. So,
is she on the fire Mark Pope train, Chris? Or she just said, get him out of town?
No, not yet. I mean, he's beloved there, but yeah, it does start to get to a point where everybody starts to give him the kind of crooked eye going, hey, man, we love you, but you got to win some of these games.
If he loses to Indiana this weekend, whoo, watch out.
Yeah, yeah. And so, again, he's got to eventually win one of those. But, I mean, Florida's going through their growing pains. We knew that that was going to be a little bit different, you know, with all the pieces they lost. And so, look, I think the SEC is going to be fine. I still think they'll get a handful of teams in the tournament. It's just, I think a lot of them are going to go through those growing pain stages and, you know, be much better once we get into the thick of SEC play.
It's a busy time around the Southeastern Conference, and nobody covers it more and covers it better than our guy Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. My man, tell people where they can find all of your great coverage and kind of what you're talking about between now and the college football playoff next weekend.
Yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts. We got a great episode up today talking with our guy Eric Kane about the Tennessee Vols landing Jim Knowles as their new defensive coordinator. Big hire there. And then also had a couple sit-down interviews yesterday with a couple of the Lombardi Award finalists that we have up there. Cassius Howell, the defensive end from A&M, who was named SEC Defensive Player of the Year. And then also the starting left tackle for Alabama. Got to sit down with him. So that was a good conversation. And yeah, more to come next week. Sean Alexander going to join the show. Michael Taff, current defensive back for the Longhorns, going to join. So we got a lot of big names stopping by Locked On SEC.
We appreciate it as always, my friend. We'll do it again next Thursday before the college football playoff.
All right. Sounds good, fellas.
Appreciate it. Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Check him out wherever you get your podcast or on YouTube. He's posting daily content talking all of the biggest topics around the Southeastern Conference. Yeah, I think we mentioned the news the other day, Christian, about Jim Knowles to Tennessee. But my goodness, I mean, talk about one of the best coordinator hires of the cycle. Like,
it's crazy.
And it like just kind of went by the wayside. I think we mentioned it when it was first starting to get reported, but it wasn't official. But I mean, does it get better than that for Tennessee? Hiring Jim Knowles, a top 5 defensive coordinator, a national championship winning defensive coordinator.
Not like, when your head coach / offensive coordinator is Josh Heupel.
I mean, Tennessee's defense was not good. Their defensive front is nasty.
Yes.
But the their defense linebacker as a whole, and secondary is pitiful. Yeah. So
when you pair that with the explosiveness of Heupel's offense.
Yeah.
I think we did talk about it a little bit yesterday because
I can't remember if that was on that, or off air.
I think it was on air because that was when Jordan Hill let us know that Georgia doesn't play Tennessee next year.
That's right. That is right.
Which you feel like is a sin.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that. Oh, my God. Today's Thursday. The schedule releases tonight. We talked so much about it yesterday, I forgot it was actually today.
Yeah.
How about that?
We'll be able to talk about it all tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. That'll be a big portion of Free For All Friday tomorrow. Yeah, that's coming up tonight. I think it's 6 o'clock on the SEC Network. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, something like that. I can't remember. So we will... I put a clock in there just so I could avoid it. Yep. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the Thursday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. If you've missed any of it, be sure to go back and catch it with the podcast. We take the show audio, put it on our station website for you at ESPNAU.com or wherever you get your podcast. You can find it there as well. We have covered a lot of the Sherrone Moore news about him being fired from Michigan, the possible replacements of him, Kalen DeBoer is on that list. Jed Fish from Washington is on that list. Also, Kenny Dillingham is on that list. So probably more on that tomorrow if there's any movement between now and then. We also did not have Brad Law like we normally do, but we were able to get our guy Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today to hop on and talk about all the moves for the Atlanta Braves and some of the surprising moves around Major League Baseball. So that was in hour number one. We've also continued to talk about the positions for Auburn football that we are excited about, confident about, and some that we are not confident about. And with that, and then just talked to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC moments ago. So all of that here on the show today. If you missed it, check it out at ESPNAU.com.
Wrapping up here the show today, Auburn football scheduling news. I know this will make a lot of people happy in the state of Alabama as Troy, for the first time ever, coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium in 2031.
That's cool. That is cool.
The first time these teams will meet.
Yeah. South Alabama was the same way this year in 2025. Yeah. So I think that's cool. And I told Doug this earlier, like, this is not, no shade being thrown here at all. This is not a Alabama State coming where it's like, okay, cool trip for those guys. Buddy, Troy's going to come in here with a good football team and have every chance to win that if Auburn doesn't play well.
Troy just played for the conference championship.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's Troy's a legitimate, like, powerhouse program. I mean, they're respectful, absolutely. So, very cool to see that. Speaking of scheduling news, that will also be on TV tonight. The SEC schedule release on the SEC Network. Did want to shout this out as well. We'll definitely talk more about this tomorrow as this came out about an hour ago. We got some confirmation early in the week that this was going to happen. And now it has. Auburn has hired a new special teams coach in Jacob Bronowski. It's a big hire, man. If you don't know the name, look him up. His stats and his numbers are pretty incredible for a position or a part of the game for Auburn that's just been miserable in terms of special teams. So we'll talk more about him tomorrow, recap the staff as a whole tomorrow, scheduling news tomorrow, and anything else that's on your mind. You want to know why? Because tomorrow's Free For All Friday, and we'll have that for you right here from 2 to 4 on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.